is the Internet Report, where we uncover what's working and what's breaking on the internet and why. We had a big week last week. There were multiple outages. We had Slack, we had Zoom. I think we even had AWS, EU West 2 had some issues. I think Verizon had some issues, but we're not gonna talk about any of that. Today, we're really just gonna focus on what everyone's talking about, it seems, which is this really significant global network outage that happened in CenturyLink's network, and that also included Level 3, which is a major transit provider and is operated and owned by CenturyLink. So that's what we're gonna go deep on today. Before we do that and go under the hood, let's maybe just kind of take a look at the very basic root cause analysis that CenturyLink has put out around this incident. Hopefully more data or information will emerge, but what they put out was kind of interesting and also aligns with what we saw in our own from the standpoint of our vantage points.
Right. And just to quantify this outage a little bit, obviously it had like a massive impact because it was CenturyLink and Level 3 and they are a really big transit provider. But also how long this outage lasted. It started around 6 a.m. Eastern and lasted for about 5 hours, as it's seen from their RCA statement as well.
Which is pretty stunning in terms of a length of an outage. And we'll talk a little bit about why it took so long for them to remediate this issue. Just in terms, again, on the scope, I think that some folks had thrown out something like 3.5% of internet traffic was impacted, something along those lines. I mean, just to give a sense again of kind of the scope of the damage. I mean, they're tier one and they peer with very large providers. And also they're used by pretty much every service that you can imagine, from Google to Cloudflare. Again, these are, highly trafficked destinations. Lots of enterprises use them. And then even we do, which we'll talk about a little bit as well.
And again, from the perspective of a lot of services use them as their direct upstream provider, but they're also such a big transit provider, like access to services that might not even directly, be doing business with CenturyLink or be engaged with CenturyLink, were also impacted, right?
Absolutely.
That's kind of
Need to have been a customer or a direct peer of them in order to have been impacted. In fact, there were many folks who were impacted, even if it could have been multiple degrees away.
And I think the term impact also depends on from where your users are, where they're coming from, and what segment of those users were affected because a major transit provider had an outage. But talking a little bit about the RCA that CenturyLink had put out, and hopefully over the next few days we get kind of a more detailed output from them. But as of now, the root cause of this issue, as I stated, as you can see here, is an offending flow spec announcement that prevented BGP from establishing correctly.
Yeah, right? That's right. And then just for context, flow spec is basically an extension to BGP, and it operates similarly to ACLs or ACLs from the standpoint of it kind of being a set of rules, firewall rules. But the difference between them and FlowSpec is that FlowSpec is dynamic, which is one of the reasons why it could be very powerful, but also very dangerous in terms of its implication if something goes wrong.
Right. And, we were talking to somebody from our ops team earlier today, and we were talking of discussing how dangerous this extension could be just because of, what it triggered. And he was passionately supporting what a great extension FlowSpec is. And to kind of, understand that, it's important to think through why FlowSpec came into being, right? And historically, FlowSpec came in to be able to push updates quickly into multiple routers that you might own, and has been associated to do these, you know, changes when there was kind of some kind of a DDoS attack or you know, some kind of security attack. So right now, fast forward 10, 15 years, we have all sorts of automation, orchestration in place. So it really questions if something like FlowSpec is going to be useful or not. But that's not the main topic of this conversation. But it turns out that this protocol that was, you know, kind of formed and built years ago to be able to push these rules broadly across routers resulted in this really catastrophic event. And to your Angelique, one of the things that you mentioned is that, like, it works as an ACL, right? And I think, well, the charm is that it works as an ACL and it can filter out. The fact that that update is so dynamic, and then it triggers as you get, and it's associated with BGP. So if you get a BGP announcement, say for instance, with the FlowSpec in there, that can trigger the ACL, and we'll see what that can do, because that's kind of what happened in this incident.
Right, so they basically said that this FlowSpec basically shut down BGP. So it would have terminated existing BGP sessions. And the implication of that is that, as others have pointed out, is that once that happens and BGP is shut down, when the routers attempt to reestablish connections, that they will have been sending out a lot of BGP updates. And we'll take a look at kind of what that meant in terms of users of their service.
And one of the things that I think this was Cloudflare that called out as witnessed through route views as well, around the beginning of the outage at 10 UTC, 6 a.m. Eastern, the size of BGP updates that were, seen from level 3 was kind of, I don't know how big they were, but they were pretty big than what a regular BGP announcement would look like. So. Yeah. Something to do with FlowSpec and the number of updates that were going on across all their peers. I think kind of.
Well, so, yes, the sessions were terminated because of FlowSpec, but in trying to reestablish them, they're basically redoing the announcements. And then once their peers receive these announcements, they're propagating them across their peers and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And so it has this cascading impact. It's not just level 3's updates, it's all of the consequent or subsequent updates that need to be made. So it really has this cascading impact. And yeah. It was like a 10x something, the number of announcements that are than what is typically seen. And but was interesting was that it kind of had a tail off effect, which really did kind of align with some of the de-peering that was done as the outage just continued. So after 2, 3, 4 hours, some of their major peers at that point shut down their peering with them. And so they were no longer propagating out routes, which was probably one of the reasons why it went down. Right.
It did give them some time to stabilize because they were not catering and trying to honor all those updates that was coming in, which was kind of jamming CenturyLink's control plane and network. All right. With that, I think we'll jump right into what Thousand Eyes saw terms of, how this outage kind of unfolded for us. So let me pull that up.
All right. So this is sort of the aggregate view across just the huge number of tests that are run from our vantage points. And so, precisely at the start of the outage, so this was 10 a.m. UTC, we see a really significant increase in terminal interfaces. And so this is basically where level 3 is just completely dropping traffic, right?
Yeah.
At these particular points. What's interesting is that even though this had a global impact, a lot of what we're seeing kind of seemed to initially start kind of on the West Coast. This, you know, 10 a.m. UTC is 3 a.m. Pacific time, which, and 6 a.m. Eastern time. And again, this is Sunday. So it almost seems like this maybe potentially, and we don't know yet, we're still waiting on details, but could this have been part of some maintenance event where they're making changes to their network? Could it have been because they were responding to a DDoS attack, which is, you know, one of the ways FlowSpec has been used? We just don't know, but the timing is kind of does align with, you know, when you might want to make changes to your network such that they didn't impact users. So be interesting to see if we get more details on this, if that is in fact the case, if they tried to make some benign updates and then just kind of, you know,
it triggered
go as they had planned. Yeah.
Right. Right. No, totally. Because if we actually look into, you know, another snapshot in here, as it's loading up, one of the triggers that, or the initial first set of, you know, signatures that we kind of saw in this with respect to this outage, and what you're looking at here is, you know, BGP path changes, to be very specific, to actually our own applications prefix here, which again, like a lot of services that were impacted, Cloudflare, we saw some Google services get impacted. We saw a variety of like consumer services like OpenTable or GoToMeeting, and you know, we could just keep naming names, is basically shut down half the internet yesterday. We were also a victim of that particular outage because we do rely on CenturyLink as you know, one of our tier one ISPs.
Yeah.
So going to that exact time frame, just expanding this a little bit in here around again 10 o'clock UTC, we start seeing this.
Well, this is the first, this is the beginnings of it, you know, so this is, you know, this was clearly a control plane issue. And from an external standpoint, this is like the first manifestation of it, which is they like, it kind of looks like, you know, they were suddenly like, there was a lot of route flapping. They were sending out announcements, they were revoking announcements. And so it was going a little bit haywire from a, kind of a BGP route perspective.
Right. And the RCA, which is FlowSpec kind of hindering BGP sessions, and then like, you know, or bringing down BGP sessions and having those peers come back up and trying to reestablish is probably what we're seeing here with a lot of like route withdrawals or like, you know, reestablishing, like, you know, peering with other providers.
And announcements going out. Yeah.
If we go across in here from a timeline perspective, just to see what these different updates look like and kind of also give you a flavor of, you know, what can enterprises do to be able to, you know, work around or bypass, you know, something like this, right? Is what we're going to see next. Let me see if we're bringing out the right timeline. So actually, this is interesting, right? Like, you know, 15 minutes after 10 o'clock, we see that there's some kind of stability with respect to level three and the peering, the routes that it's established with its peers.
And yet during this same period of time, they're dropping traffic. So they're announcing routes and then they're black holing traffic. And this is kind of the behavior that was across the board, across all of their customers and any peers that were impacted. So, you know, the announcements were one thing, but even once the announcements had stabilized, it wasn't good because they were dropping traffic, they were announcing. And so we'll talk a little bit about kind of some peering changes that were made and what was so kind of really, really unusual about this incident is that there was really nothing that their customers could do to route around the issue because of the nature of this outage and the fact that level three was effectively advertising zombie routes. They were basically,
I feel like, unable to honor any updates that were coming in from their peers or from enterprises, that were essentially saying or trying to withdraw routes. But level three is control plane. CenturyLink probably was so jammed because of, you know, what was going on that they were really unable to like do anything there. So they continued to kind of advertise the older routes, which didn't really serve the purpose of, you know, trying to bypass or go around.
Right. Anytime you have an outage like this, you know, you're thinking, okay, I can maybe change my advertisements and that will fix it. But to your point, their control plane was broken. And so there was a lot of folks who were revoking advertisements to level three, and level three was, you know, call it what you will, hijacking, whatever. They were continuing to advertise those routes independently, which we'll see here.
Angelique, just to call attention to it, to the timeline here, right? Like the first type of triggers that we saw was in around 10 o'clock in line with the RCA and what everybody has seen.
The start of the incident, yeah.
Start of the incident. And the second, like, you know, peak that we see here is around 10:45, right? And there, and to your point, like, there are a couple of things that's happening here right now.
So some of the path changes here are influenced by level three just kind of doing their own thing on their own, and some of them are influenced by ourselves in this case. So here, you know, we're basically have at this point in time have revoked announcement of our prefixes to level three, and at the same time have established a peering relationship and have started advertising through Cogent as the secondary provider here.
Right. And you know, even before the outage, like what this looked like is having two upstreams, one is Zio and the other one is level three. And then because of level three issues, we kind of withdraw from level three and then start peering with Cogent.
Yeah. And two important things were done at this time, which I think it is important to point out and is one of the takeaways here, which is there were certain things in this outage that were completely uncontrollable from the standpoint of their customers and enterprises. The fact that their routes were still being hijacked and they weren't valid is one thing. But you, when you consider asymmetric routing, and if you have even if you can't control the advertisement of your prefixes, you can control who you're sending traffic to. And if you know one of those providers is severely incapacitated, you don't want to be sending them traffic because it's just going to get dropped. So in this particular instance, with this update, one, the prefixes were revoked to level three, announcing our own prefix, but also it we're not accepting inbound traffic from CenturyLink. And that's really important because then that prevented us from, you know, we're basically not sending them any more traffic. And so, you know, if something comes through from, say, Zayo or from Cogent, it will come out, go out that way as well.
Right. And the way it manifested, and sometimes what you see from a service point of view is like, it might seem like, say, for instance, another provider is dropping because you're kind of seeing the path only one way. But traffic actually being dropped at CenturyLink in the reverse route. So I think that was kind of,
just because it's coming in under Zayo, and for example, and you know, and you're expecting them to work, doesn't mean that it's necessarily going out through the same provider. And so you have to understand that you can, you know, in this instance, you could have controlled the outbound traffic. That's always in your control. Inbound, you can influence, but you can't, 100% control. But outbound, you have complete control over that. And so that's something to keep in mind.
Yeah, I think the other interesting thing here, as we were like walking through this earlier today, is to kind of get that you know, another validation that level three was not ceasing to send, you know, updates, right? Because here we're seeing 23 routes, say for instance, this example, like we are established with Cogent, and this is a completely new peering relationship that we triggered because of level three's outage. However, those same 23 routes, we see them through level three's network as well, which, you know, if the withdrawals had gone as expected, we shouldn't have seen this. We should have seen the same number of paths
or same number of routes before and after, but that's not the case here. So, you know, during these periods in which they were doing their re-announcements, they were just basically kind of the number of routes would go up,
right?
And then it would kind of return to lower levels throughout this incident. So,
yeah. So this was one type of like, you know, looping situation. We saw like level three do this, you know, route withdrawals, establishment at 10 o'clock, then around 10:45 we see this. At 10:45 we also see a new connection established through Cogent from our end. And as we just like walk through this timeline a little bit, we kind of see, you know, some semblance of stability here, right? We see again, level three back to peering with its with the other ISPs. So almost feels like there's a pattern here in terms of there is some instability, and then in the next interval, level three seems like it's established peering. Then again, you know, the other interval, it withdraws its BGP routes, and then
it's going through these cycles where it's just like it's announcing the routes, and then it will go where it like will revoke the announcements and then reestablish them. And it's going in these cycles. Now, this is just from a control plane standpoint or a routing standpoint, effectively through the duration of the outage, like they were just dropping traffic. So it was independent of any of kind of the announcements and even the route flapping.
Right.
So it wasn't like the route flapping was causing the traffic loss even when they were not route flopping, we're still dropping traffic.
Right. One of the interesting updates as the outage was, you know, happening was this Twitter input that we saw from Telia, one of, you know, level three's peers, that almost 4 hours into the outage, like around 10 a.m. Eastern, announced that they were asked to de-peer from CenturyLink. And when the outage cleared itself, which was around 11 a.m. Eastern, so that's 5 hours into the outage, Telia sent out another message saying that, you know, they've been asked to de-peer because the outage has, you know, basically it's done and things are stable now. Yeah. We saw that here from another provider, entity, right?
Yeah.
Like,
they did it earlier too. I mean, This was like 3 hours into the incident. It's sort of interesting that Telia said that they had to be asked to de-peer, where, you know, one has to wonder, like, is that the kind of the right order? You know, should you need to wait to be asked, or should there have been some proactive de-peering in order to prevent some impact to their customers? So in the case, you know, of NTT here, we can see that about 3 hours into the incident that they, you know, effectively, rather than peering with level three, they've begun to peer with Cogent.
Yeah.
So that may in fact have addressed some issues for their customers anyway. The other thing that's kind of interesting from the BGP standpoint is sort of a question around, okay, so, you know, like we mentioned earlier, is that what CenturyLink was effectively doing by advertising routes that were revoked by their customers, like we had done here, you know, you could almost kind of think of that as like route hijacking. And now they didn't hijack routes, but effectively that's what was happening. In a route hijacking scenario, one of the tools at your disposal in order to kind of mitigate the attacker, whether, you know, or maybe attacker or even just like benign, you know, configuration mistake that might be causing this, is to advertise a more specific prefix. And that would then be preferred as kind of the shorter path to your service. And then, you know, you could basically steer traffic around the issue. That would require a few different things. You have to have, you have to have that option available to you. Like if you only have a slash 24, that's not going to be necessarily a good idea, because splitting that into slash 25s might not be the best. There's maybe some debate on that. But for example, if you're like Cloudflare and you advertise a slash 20, if you start advertising a slash 21, that could potentially address the issue, although we didn't see them make that change. And one has to wonder, maybe because they're in any cast service, if it was determined that doing that would have had unforeseen or negative consequences in terms of how traffic was was getting routed, and then how much traffic was hitting each of their individual locations and resources.
Right.
So a lot to consider.
Right. And also there was this other, question on would, like, if we had just shut the interface to CenturyLink, right? Like, you physically terminated the interface, which was also done, would there have been like any impact? And no, not in this particular case, because it was really beyond the enterprise's control. Like, there was no way you could twist CenturyLink's hand in this particular case to stop advertising the routes, right? Like, setting any type of BGP strings or trying to influence that.
You mean like a no export? I mean, the control plane was broken. They weren't even kind of really taking in any new kind of announcement changes. So, but that's really just from an external announcement standpoint. Again, you can control who you're sending traffic to.
Right. And we did see some cases where, you know, a few services were able to recover fast enough, but a few others did not. Like, for instance, I think this was GoToMeeting. I think this was GoToMeeting where we were able to.
They seem to have they fared better, it seemed, during the incident than, for example, just, you know, for comparative purposes, OpenTable. And there could be a few different reasons for that. We can talk a little bit about what happened with them and the fact that, without them doing anything really different, they were able to avoid some of the, high level of damage.
Right.
Let's just maybe look at OpenTable first and see how they experienced it, and then we can go to meeting.
Yeah, that makes sense. So what we're looking at here is trying to access OpenTable.com from, a few global locations here. And again, right at 10 a.m. UTC, we start seeing issues. Again, this is, level 3, trying significant packet drops in here. And this is across the board, right? Like, all locations that it's going through level 3 is impacted. And this, as you can see from the timeline here, this lasted pretty much till like 1425. So till actually when the service came back up.
Yeah. Right? So they basically were impacted for the duration of the incident.
Right. And the way they recovered is truly just like completely bypass level 3. And also, this is the point in time where any kind of, route advertisements or like, BGP related pushes that, the enterprise has done were actually being honored.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that
they took some remediation action when they should have, but it's just that because of how this outage unfolded and that CenturyLink wasn't honoring those, they didn't actually like get implemented until like the end of this this incident.
Right. Go ahead.
Well, so this is now GoToMeeting, and again, like, this is an enterprise that in many ways did, like OpenTable, did all the right things that they should have done. But they had a very different experience of the outage than OpenTable.
Right. And just from a service, view, if we look at this here and we're looking at, packet loss, end-to-end packet loss in the network, we do start seeing the impact of the outage here right around 10 o'clock, right? So around 10:04, we're starting to see packet drops across basically all networks. And the reason you're seeing this across all networks is because the next hop or the upstream from
the interface, the connected next interface is level three.
Right.
So it's the peering interface. Yeah.
And it's the peering, so it's kind of the penultimate node where you're kind of seeing the drops. And the reason is because GoToMeeting that's hosted in, that Citrix's product basically has just one upstream provider, which is level three. And so when level three goes down, everybody else.
One active.
Oh, that's fair.
Service provider, which is interesting because we usually see the typical architecture is that you have two service providers and you use them in like an active mode where you're load balancing across them. And then if there's an issue, then, it's just the other one will just either carry the load or even in some instances we see you might have an active config and then one passive even as a backup. You could have kind of a variety of things.
That's kind of what we saw in our we had active with Zayo and level three and was kind of the backup.
Yeah, but don't see active passive too much, but that's what we see here.
Right. So was this right here? Yeah. So this is, I think this is what, 15 minutes, like around 15 minutes into the outage, we start seeing Citrix establish, the active peering with GTT, kind of completely withdrawing from level three.
Yeah.
And the impact of that is kind of seen, if we look at it here, like this packet drops really just lasted for like what, 20 minutes, and the recovery to the service is back up, right? Obviously, if you are connecting from CenturyLink itself, you're still going to see some kind of issues because your vantage point is within CenturyLink's network and you're kind of going to see drops there, that's inevitable. But even these were able to course correct and we started seeing availability to the service come back up pretty quickly here.
Right, and that immediate spike after all of those announcement changes, whether by, whether in like now announcing through GTT and then maybe route or level three making additional whatever zombie announcements, that would have been almost kind of like a little flapping of because the routes are changing. And so that could have also contributed to that kind of immediate spike in packet loss as like routes were converging. But what's kind of interesting, if you go back to the BGP route visualization, you can see that, so even after they kind of made this change, like level three never goes away. because they're still advertising, right? Like even though, the intent with bringing GTT online was to just use them as a service, like level three is like, nope, we're not going away. But yet we see that there's not a lot of packet loss and level three is not really in as many paths as they were prior to GTT's introduction. And what's particularly interesting about that is that, the fact that GTT is so densely peered may have been the reason why they were just simply preferred as a path to Citrix, even though level three was still in the mix. Like they were still advertising, but GTT pops in, they have more peers, so then maybe providers at that point may have just simply been preferring GTT and there were just more paths available through that provider. And that's more of the luck of the draw, right? Because with OpenTable, they were using level three and they were using Zayo, right? And Zayo is kind of considered a lower tier provider than level three. And so because level three was still advertising, a lot of folks may still have been sending them, may have been preferring that path.
Right. It really just depends who your backup is and how densely paired they are, and how well used they are as well. And again, to your point, like if this had been, say, Zayo or some other smaller ISP in here, we might have not seen this this level of recovery, right?
Exactly. And that's kind of, you know, that's almost like just luck, because, you know, it could be, you may think, okay, well, I need like, you know, a higher tier backup. Well, I mean, it could have gone either way. Like you could have had GTT
go down
and, you know, they were the problem. And then you were getting all of your traffic sent to GTT and there was the issue. Right, so, right. That's just how internet routing in the wild works.
So yeah, so a lot of things that, you know, happened in the course of 5 hours, and you know, I can't even imagine what kind of day it was for level three ops team.
Their customers.
Yeah, definitely their customers. And I think we were talking about this earlier. The only silver lining truly is that it happened on a Sunday.
Yeah.
And you know, it had happened during a weekday, kind of. The impact we would have seen would have been really, really catastrophic, more catastrophic than what it actually turned out to be.
Absolutely. So, okay, so lessons learned.
We have some interesting, I mean, we discussed it, but some good takeaways and you know, for enterprises, for providers. You want to kick that off?
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that's interesting that we, you know, we kind of went over at the very top of the show is the root cause analysis, or the statement that was put out by CenturyLink is pretty basic. And in fact, during the course of the incident, I think it wasn't until, I mean, we're talking hours into the incident in which there was any kind of public statement made by CenturyLink. And so if you're one of their customers, you don't know what's going on, you know, and you're not getting any kind of quick communication. So it's important to have kind of just, you know, more transparency perhaps from service providers, like we see a lot from cloud providers and from providers like Cloudflare, you know, being more open with customers as to what's going on and being quick to communicate, I think is something that perhaps enterprises can push more with their service provider. One way to do that, of course, is to keep them honest with, you know, just independent information and visibility into how they're working.
And I think that one of the things that we were talking about earlier was also how the first line of support when it comes to these service providers, like you're filing and opening a ticket, for instance, and the first line of support is not necessarily aware of the exact details of what's happening in the NOC. For instance, like they're aware of a problem and they're going to tell you, yeah, we are aware of a problem, we are working on it, but there's really no more detail that
can tell you scope, if there's like, you know,
ETA,
some really specific thing that you could be doing, you know, it's just not going to come.
Right. So in terms of transparency, you know, and keeping providers and in a lot of cases, when you're dealing with ISPs and when you're dealing with service providers, enterprises have to go through this need to prove innocence, or like need to kind of establish that, hey, there is something going on, right? I mean, we are not like trying to push the ball on you and blame you, but there is seriously something that's going on. So I think like the general need for, you know, being aware of this is going to help, like both, I see take a look at this as, you know, everybody coming to the table trying to solve the issue together rather than placing blame or, you know, pushing it on somebody's, problem state and making it somebody else's problem statement, right? It's really about how much can we collaborate to kind of help you understand scope and also resolve the issue.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I think another takeaway is really understanding that, you know, at the end of the day, internet routing is somewhat uncontrolled and unpredictable and also contextual. You know, it depends on where your users are sitting, which path they're going to take to your service. You can't always control that. You can't control like who peers with who and how that changes at any given time. And so, you know, just be aware of that and understand, you know, somewhat, you know, at least a few degrees away from you, what your kind of dependencies are. And also, you know, from that standpoint, you know, like from an outbound standpoint and the, in terms of like advertising routes to your service, like that's something you can influence, but you can't 100% control, but you can control where you send traffic to. So making some of those changes locally could have helped to mitigate some of the impact of this. And then the other thing is also kind of just understanding outages in context is really important, because as we mentioned earlier, like, you know, this timing is everything. If this had happened during the weekday, you know, I think that the impact on services and, you know, the financial impact for a lot of enterprises would have been far greater. So, you know, thinking about, you know, how you evaluate your service providers from that standpoint is also something to keep in mind.
Yeah, totally. It's definitely been learning for us. I mean, as we've been kind of, you know, peeling through these outages over the last few years, so these really large outages like actually do surprise us in terms of, you know, what else could go wrong, right? Like, I mean, we're like, yeah, I think we understand everything that could go wrong with BGP updates, but nope, not really. Like,
no.
You know, in this particular case, Flow Spec as a feature, as BGP extension, is actually a really useful and you know, valid protocol that a lot of service providers still use. But it's kind of really unfortunate how it kind of manifested in this case. Be that because of, you know, misconfiguration, whatever the reason might be and how it actually came to happen, we don't know. But it's like another, yet another new thing that could, you know, go wrong with BGP.
Yes. So, you know, really interesting. And we'll have more, we'll kind of get into the nitty gritty of this with a little bit more depth than even, you know, the show on our blog. So be sure to check that out. And, you know, if you're sort of interested in how it might have impacted your services, you know, because it, again, like it manifested differently for everybody, you know, let us know, drop us a note, you know, we'd be happy to chat about what you saw, you know, what you experienced. If you have any questions, I'm happy to take a look. So,
yeah, and if you were somebody in the ops team who was struggling to, you know, kind of make this all go away, and if there was something different that you tried that worked for you or didn't work for you, it doesn't matter, let us know. It'd be great to kind of even have you on the show and kind of educate the community. We're on this together, so that would be
absolutely. So with that, we're going to close out the show. As always, don't forget to subscribe, and if you do subscribe, we will send you a cool t-shirt, working from home shirt. Be sure to send your, if you do subscribe, drop an email to theinternetreport@thousandeyes.com. Give us your address and your t-shirt size, and we'll get that right over for you. And until next time,
yeah, have a great week.